Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Jim McGovern, I want to know about the Ukraine. Everybody wants to know about Ukraine. What's going on?
Well, obviously, it's a difficult situation, I think Russia made a huge mistake by, you know, deploying troops there, and they now appear to be on the verge of trying to annex the Crimea. But my view on how we kind of get out of this is that politicians in Washington ought to kind of shut their mouths for a little bit. I mean, there are people rattling the sabers here. You'd think we're about ready to go to World War III.
So you're talking about John McCain?
Yeah,
and people like
John
that,
McCain, yeah. And a few others. And to get out of this situation, it's really going to require skilled diplomacy. We ought to let the president and Secretary of State Kerry do their job. You know, but the more we kind of rattle the sabers here in the United States, the more I think Putin gets backed into a corner. I mean, the challenge here is to get Putin to step down and not appear like he's losing face. And we also need to get the discussion away from the U.S. versus Russia, mm-hmm. And get it back onto the Ukraine. The people of the Ukraine ought to decide their future, not the United States, not Russia, but the people of Ukraine. What we should be spending more time talking about is, you know, how to call for free and fair elections, you know, how to make sure that there are international monitors to make sure that there's an opportunity for there to be some freedom of the press so that people can get a fair understanding of what the issues are. Let the Ukrainians decide their future. That's the way it should be. But I worry that we're getting into this kind of Russia-U.S. thing, and, you know, we're forgetting about the people. This shouldn't be just talked about in terms of a Russian power play. It should be discussed in terms of what is the best thing for the Ukrainian people. We have to get back onto that. On that subject.
Changing subjects, is there any way that you see the Republicans in the House of Representatives going for a minimum wage increase?
No, I don't. But again, you know, I think if we had a vote, if they allowed us to bring it to a vote, we might have a chance of passing it. Because I think there may be a handful of Republicans that, if forced to go on record, would vote to increase the minimum wage. And by the way, even if we increase the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, a person working full time making $10.10 will still be poor enough to be in poverty and to be on food stamps. So we're not, you know, we're helping some. Obviously it ought to be increased, but let's not fool ourselves into thinking that just increasing minimum wage is going to somehow magically address the issue of income inequality. We ought to be talking about a livable wage. And we ought to be talking about, you know, the fact that if you work full time in this country, then you should be out of poverty. You should not have to live in poverty. You should be earning enough so you don't need to rely on SNAP or, you know, LIHEAP or other federal programs to help put food on your table or heat your home. But I think if we can get a vote, we might be able to pass it. But I think Speaker Boehner, just like with immigration reform, you know, does not want that to come before his members for an up or down vote.
Well, so let me ask you this. Is this a potent political issue that can be used by the Democrats in congressional elections?
I think it should be. I think it should be. Because, look, this is about helping to, you know, lift people up. And we ought to be talking about protecting the middle class and expanding the middle class. And wages are obviously an important part of that. And so we ought to, every chance we get, talk about raising the minimum wage. We ought to talk about pay equity for women. The fact of the matter is women earn less than men on average for doing the same job.
Are women united on that issue?
I've been going through some of the conservative parts of my district, you know, that are pretty red, especially in the Blackstone Valley area. And when I talk about this issue of pay equity, you know, I mean, every woman in the room nods her head approvingly, and even a lot of men do. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is that, women don't deserve to get paid less for doing the same job. And this is a basic civil right, and we ought to fix that income disparity and once and for all. And it would be not only good for women, it's good for families. You know, it strengthens families. It provides more income to families and, you know, more security. So I think that's an important issue as well.
Do men who have, as I do, wives who are professors and daughters who are professors, sisters and the rest, are men coming around?
I do believe the men are coming around in part because, again, more and more you have two people in a family working. And I think, you know, I think men are coming to the understanding that it just doesn't make sense for his spouse who's doing essentially the same work as another man. It doesn't make any sense that she gets paid less, you know, and for the kind of the security of that family, I think it's men are beginning to realize how important pay equity is. Also, I think more and more men are understanding that it's a basic civil right. You know, women should not be discriminated against because they are women. And look, this country, I think, in so many ways, is an example for the rest of the world. And you know, to the extent that we start tearing down these barriers that prevent a particular group in our country from being able to kind of achieve their dreams, every time we tear down one of those walls, I think that enhances our credibility around the world. And and this is one of these areas that we still have discrimination in this country, not just against people because of their race, but also because of their gender. We need to kind of tear down that wall and not just say that we support equal rights, but make sure that everybody does have equal rights in this country.
I got a couple of minutes more. I want to spend it on climate change. You saw the Senate had an all-nighter in which they wanted to bring this to everybody's attention. What's your sense of what's going on in your house, whether or not people have a sense of denial?
Well, we have people in very powerful positions in the House of Representatives and even the Senate, but the Republicans control the House. We have people who do not believe in the science, who do not believe there is a problem, who do not believe there is such a thing as climate change, or if there is, man has nothing to do with it. And as a result, they continue to support the fossil fuel industry. They continue to be on the side of people who want to pollute. I guess giving them the benefit of the doubt, maybe they truly don't believe in science. Maybe they just, don't know any better. That's really sad when you have people like that. But there's another part of it, too, and that is that the polluters in this country have a lot of money, and they use it very frequently up here on Capitol Hill, supporting campaigns, supporting political parties. And, as a result, it is in your interest financially. You raise a lot more money for your campaign when you side with the polluters. And that's kind of a very cynical way to do government. But I continue to believe that money plays a big role in our inability to address climate change. If the Supreme Court would somehow work with us so that we could actually have real campaign finance reform up here, if we could somehow get to the point where we're not treating corporations as people, if we can limit overall contributions and overall spending levels and campaigns, money becomes less of a factor, and then I think you're more likely to see movement on the issue of climate change. But big money is polluting our political system; it is undermining our democracy. And I'm afraid that there may be another case the Supreme Court decides on in the next few days that might make things even worse. So we could fix a lot more. We could fix a lot of the problems in this country if we could figure out a way to regulate more tightly the amount of money that goes into these political campaigns.
But maybe not with five Republicans on the Supreme Court.
Well, and that's the problem. I mean, you either have to change the Supreme Court, get a couple more votes, which is why it's important who is president of the United States, which is why it is important who controls the Senate, or you have to go to the public with a constitutional amendment. But that requires Congress to act first. Goes to the issue of why I think it would be better for the country if Democrats control the House as well as the Senate. But this issue of money, it's becoming a bigger and bigger problem every year. I've been reading reports about what has already been spent on campaigns thus far. We're still a few months away, from the election. I mean, it's more than we spent in the last campaign cycle at this stage. it's just not right. And I think that I think if there's kind of one issue that we really need to get right, it is this issue of money in campaigns. It's too much of it. Members of Congress spend too much time raising it, you know, and the people who have the money to give are usually the people who are on the wrong side of climate change, who are on the wrong side of like the minimum wage, who are on the wrong side of pay equity for women, who are on the wrong side of a lot of issues that we care deeply about.
Jim McGovern, always fun to have you with us. I have great respect for you, sir, and I want you to know that.
Well, I love doing that. I love these conversations.
And proud to be a Massachusetts resident.
Right.
Thanks again, Jim.
All right, all the best.